Hey, celebrate and rejoice. It's Rob Nichols and friends on Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. Not to be confused with Fly Me to the Moon, the song.
Well, Michael, good atmosphere on the training pitch this week. I suppose it states the obvious, but, you know, double over Leicester and, much fresher feel in the legs, I would have thought.
The boys are in a good place. I think training's been really good this week. It's been good for some time, really. The spirit's really good in the group. There's a natural lift, I think, with a result like that in the circumstances. So the boys definitely earned that one.
And it's interesting to see from the table that it's a good time to sort of start getting the results again, because the gap between sixth and the rest is, you know, just starting to grow a little bit.
Definitely never a bad time to get results anyway. So, the situation is what it is, you know. We know where we are. There's a lot of games to play, a lot of points to play for, and we can tidy up on a few things. We're doing a lot of good things. We can tidy up on a good few things and hopefully get some good results.
Different type of game, of course, I suppose, Plymouth.
Yes and no. I think they're a good team. You know, they've got some really good attacking threats individually, and especially as a front three with the wing backs getting involved and attacking in a lot of numbers. So you can see that from the goals they've scored, the games they've been involved in. At times, quite high scoring games. So yes, it's a whole fresh challenge again. But it's about us being as good as we can be as well. And, adapting to new challenges.
You felt you haven't had the rub of the green lately, and results haven't been going your way, and you've also had a lot of injuries. Have you had to sort of turn around and say to the players, look, we can't afford to feel sorry for ourselves? For you fringe players, this is a massive opportunity for you.
I've not had to say that one bit, to be honest. The boys honestly are so good in that way, and the positivity and their attitude is being faultless, so I've not had to say that. I think there's a drive and a motivation between them. You can see that as a group, that they're desperate to do well. So it makes my job easier when you've got a group like that, because they look after themselves. There's a few things we need to get better at, of course, and results haven't been good enough in certain games and what have you, but I can't fault the boys' application and attitude and motivation towards games. It's really top draw.
And players coming back into the side like O'Brien, making a huge contribution.
Yeah, it was a good game for Lewis. He's had a bit of a rough time, really, over the last few months, and just thought it was a perfect game for him to go and show what he can do, and I thought he was fantastic last week.
How much of a relief is it personally for you when a result does go your way, and, you know, with a good counter-attacking performance?
It's not really for me. I think I just felt for the players, the reward for them more than anything. Seeing all that effort and, as I said, the attitude and the positivity and everything they put into each game, I want to see them rewarded for that, and so that was my biggest feeling. I was pleased for the players and for what they put into the game to them, what they got out of it.
And the places that look catchable are fifth and sixth. I mean, I suppose that the message for all the teams around those positions now is consistency until the end of the season.
Yeah, I've said it for a bit. That's the magic ingredient. We've shown we can play well. We've shown we can win games against arguably the best in the division, but it's putting it together over a period of time, and that's obviously the challenge. You know, we can try and write a whole new chapter between now and the end of the season and see where it takes us.
Michael, I wouldn't call last week a shock win, but it was a win that would make a lot of people sit up and take notice, a kind of wow win. And what can a result like that do for the rest of the season?
I think when you look back at it, probably it'll tell the story. I think at this moment in time, the boys are taking a lift from it, naturally. Definitely not getting carried away, because, you know, really come Saturday, 3 o'clock, last Saturday's gone. So, but certainly take the boost and the belief in it, and maybe actually a little bit of energy and confidence going into the game. But then, like I've just said, you know, consistency is key, and one game doesn't make the season, or two games even. I know we've beaten them twice, and that doesn't tell the story of the season, so it's about kind of putting a run of results together. That's always the biggest challenge in this league.
What's the benefit of your players knowing that they can beat the best team in this division, therefore if you work it out they can probably beat any team?
Yeah, but I think the boys have felt that all season, really. I think we know what we're capable of when we're at our best or close to our best. We know that. A lot of the times we feel like we've performed pretty well, but we've missed little bits and we've missed that edge and we've ended up throwing points away, or how we see it, throwing points away rather than losing points. We've actually done it a little bit ourselves at times. So there's a lot of good in there, you know, and that's that inner belief and that inner confidence, and boys have got to take that forward and attack the rest of the season.
There's almost no getting away from the subject of injuries, but you're not alone in the top two divisions of having had a lot of injuries this season. Has anybody got any ideas about why this seems to be happening this year?
It's tough. I can only speak about ours, really. I think it's tough for us to always put your finger on it. I think you look at Johnny and Hayden's against Preston, you know, that's two tackles, that's two knees that were twisted in a tackle, that 5 minutes, you know, either side of each other towards the end of the game. That's very difficult to kind of understand. That's just one of those things that happens in football. Sometimes it goes against you, and it certainly has for us. So it's difficult to understand the intensity of the games here. We know that. Is it getting a little bit more intense? Yeah, maybe. Is it? But is it over a period of time? Is it players asked to do a certain amount and internationals and this and that? But there's not always a pattern to it, you know. You can kind of get yourself caught in a bit of a web and trying to find the answer. The short answer is it's I haven't got it, and we're still striving for it. But when, like I say, with a Hayden or a Johnny type injury, that's just something that in football that's always been there. It's difficult to accept, but nonetheless, unfortunately, it's part of the game.
Last from me, kind of two sides to this. There was going to be a protest by the fans on Saturday. There isn't, and we'll
keep that mess.
Well, it's been called off, hasn't it? So I imagine that you're glad there won't be a distraction.
No, the fans have been great at home. We want to repair that, you know, in terms of our home form last season was good. This season we feel again we haven't picked up enough points, and you know, we've had some good days at home, and the supporters have been there and supported us away. The away support's been incredible, and again it was last week. So it's up to us to keep giving them something to shout about, and hopefully we can have some more wins at home.
Thank you. Injuries.
Thank you.
Let's go. Yeah. I mean, Johnny and Hayden first. How are they? What are we talking?
We're still investigating and scanning and seeing experts or consultants, if you like, a little bit on that. So
they haven't trained this week, though.
No, I've not trained this week, so they'll be out for a period of time. We're just not sure how long yet. That's as far as I can kind of get at the moment.
Emmanuel and Josh, are they nearer for the weekend?
No, Josh is not. Emmanuel's trained this week. He's only trained for a short time, but he's trained, so he's batting around the group. So that's a big plus to have on back.
Is he?
No, Izzy's a little bit further down the line as well, so maybe a week or two for Izzy. So. Manu's the one.
Manu's the one. And I mean, just on in terms of attack, to be fair, you've kind of covered the gap pretty well, really, in different ways. Obviously, Sam's played there a bit, Sammy's played there a bit, but it's kind of no getting away from the fact that having a natural striker in the squad makes a massive difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't it? I think there's different ways to play, you know, and we all crave goals, you know, we all... You all want to score goals when you're a kid playing football. It's the thing you want to do, and it's the thing we all get kind of excited about. But I do feel that we've got ways of doing it. The boys have shared it around pretty well. Of course, we want more. We think, you know, we're capable of creating the opportunities, and we're creating. I thought the boys took the goals ever so well last week, actually, and created enough to maybe score one or two more if we were being greedy, but. So I don't doubt that the boys are capable of scoring goals. Of course, we want our best, our kind of first options to choose from, and to be able to pick the best ones from that. But I don't doubt the boys that are that, and I'm sure we can keep scoring goals.
Yeah. Just on Manu, though, you must have quite a bit of sympathy for the kind of season he's had to have, because clearly... Well, for any player, but especially one who's coming to a new club in a new country, you want to hit the ground running, you want to do this, that, and he's just never had a chance to get into any kind of rhythm, hasn't he?
Yeah, it was really unfortunate. I thought he started showing really his top form, if you like, just before he got injured the first time round, and then he came back and felt something else. So it's bit of a stop-start, but we know what Manu can do, and be a little bit patient with him as well this time round and get him back up to speed. And hopefully he can have a big save as well as the other boys between now and the end of the season and make that little bit of a difference for us.
And just when you talk about Lewis there, I mean, he's another one who's obviously not had the ideal season that he would have wanted. I mean, when the injury happened and it was clear it was going to be a long-term one, was there thoughts about him going back? Was it always a case of
I think part of for how Lewis is a man, as a person, his character and his attitude, he's thrown himself into being a player here and making it his home, and that wasn't easy after three or four games of being out. So I can't speak highly enough of him in terms of that side of it, and how hard he's worked and how much of a part of the group he is and has been even when he was injured, and that's down to him. So it's hopefully he'll get his rewards for that. You know, he played ever so well last week, and he'll be a big player for us in the coming weeks as well. And we know what he can do, we know what he's capable of. It was great to see him back playing at his best last week.
Has there been any thoughts or conversations about beyond the end of the season with him?
Not this stage. I think we're, you know, we'll go, obviously now it's getting towards that stage where, I know we've always got plans anyway, but things tend to naturally get firmed up a little bit. And so we'll see, you know, a little bit, to be honest with Lewis, is getting him back fit, getting him playing football and enjoying his football and getting him back to his best, and he's on the way to doing that.
And just one on Plymouth, I mean, I know you'll say they've got lots of different threats, and they have, but clearly Whittaker kind of stands out as kind of their main one, arguably one of the best players in the league, to be fair. I mean, where do you stand in terms of tailoring plans for a specific player like that, i.e. changing the way you maybe set up for it, or asking someone to go man for man, whatever? Because some managers are very pro that, some managers are kind of, no, that's not the way I like to operate. Where do you...
I think there's always a balance, you know. I think that's part of the judgment. I wouldn't say definitely you can't neglect it, you know. You've got to respect who you're up against, what their threats are individually or collectively, and we adapted a bit last week for going to Leicester and changed a few things. And I think I've always kind of said it, we're happy to adapt and be flexible in terms of how we set up. The principles kind of don't change within that, but you know, personnel in different positions. That's always the decision. But we certainly know what they can do, what the strengths are, and you've got to come up with something to stop it, obviously.
Good stuff. Thank you.
Just for me, Michael, how's Senny doing? He's obviously been back in the squad the last three. Is he kind of fully fit now?
Yeah, he's back training. He's been back training fully, probably a couple of weeks, really. So maybe a little bit longer. He's back fit.
Yeah, I mean, in that time where you've still kept Tom in, you've kept your faith in Tom in the goal, is that testament, you know, how you felt he did in that period without Senny?
I think that's part of the squad, you know. It's of having players playing well and players doing everything they can to get into the team. I think we've seen that throughout the squad over the course of the season, and I like to see the competition and the boys pushing each other in a healthy way, supporting each other at the same time, because we're all in it together, we all get the same results. So that's part of it, and you know, it's up to us to make the decision of who plays at what time.
I guess it kind of goes towards that idea of competition and healthy competition, because obviously Senny had that jersey at the start of the season until his injury. Tom came in, did well, and I guess, you know, if it was then Senny's fit, he's back in, that wouldn't potentially send the right message, would it, to others?
We've had injuries throughout the squad, players coming in and out. I'm not sure off the top of my head anyone who's kind of played all the time, you know. Everyone at some point has played some games and missed some games. Johnny being the captain has played some games, played a lot of games, missed some games. So, you know, it's not a isolated incident. I think it's part of having a good squad and having players to choose from and different skill sets as well, you know. So the goalkeeper doesn't change that, and you know, as long as they're training well and pushing each other and being at their best, then gives us a big choice to make.
Yeah. We spoke after the last home game about the, you know, the fact that the home form hadn't been quite where you wanted it to be, but it wasn't something you were, you know, overly concerned about, overly looking at. But how important is it in the, you know, remainder of the season that you do be at the Riverside, you know, the fortress that it needs to be?
Yeah, of course, ideally we're striving for that. You know, it's it gives you a foundation. We don't approach home games to away games much different, to be honest. I think last week was maybe a bit of a one-off, and understandably so, but most of the time it's pretty much the same whatever game we're playing. Yeah, of course, you know, you're meant to have some sort of an advantage from playing at home. That's what everyone sees, so we've got to try and take advantage of every little bit we can between now and the end of the season, because every little bit matters.
You mentioned you don't change, you know, how you play home and away. Do you ever sense that some teams potentially come to the Riverside and maybe change the way they play and maybe look to sit in a bit again?
Yeah, there's changes being made. I think changes tactically as well, in terms of what teams do. That maybe some teams haven't really shown that they were going to do it. But then there's the other side of it, and we've done the same in certain games like last week. So that's part of football, you know. You can plan for all you like without expecting a certain way of playing or playing up against, but you've got to be ready to adapt, and teams are going to change. They're going to try and stop you. We're trying to stop the opposition, and that's the cat and mouse part of it, you know. And it's who can change and adapt and evolve, really, for even during the games or during a half of football. And sometimes that's down to the players and seeing it and doing something about it, because it's not always easy to get the messages on. So that's just part of the challenge, you know, of who can come out on top.
Yeah, and obviously you always say you like your players, particularly in the attack and on the in possession, to play with that expression and that freedom. And I guess, you know, if teams aren't playing like that, then you need your players to kind of have that about them to break teams like that down.
Yeah, there's always an element of freedom, I think, without getting carried away and saying to kind of do what you want, go and play where you want. I think there's a certain... there's a framework or a structure that you kind of, each game we try and stick to and work from, and I think there was elements of that last week, really, when and the attacking players looked dangerous. I thought it was really a big part of our game was the fact that, yeah, we were compact at times, we defended well as a team at times, but I thought we always had that element of we could score and we looked dangerous, and I was really pleased with that part of the game.
It was a good week, obviously a brilliant week for us last week, but it was also a really good week for Ben Hazard with his goals. And obviously he played a big part for Plymouth against us down there. So he kind of owes us to keep his goals going, run going, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, he took one off while he scored against us, so he could keep scoring for us anyway. two good goals, actually, two very different goals from Finn. I thought particularly the one against Leicester was a terrific finish to be running at full speed, to then have the kind of softness of feet and the balance to then kind of lift it over the goalkeeper in somewhere. It's easy to just come on and kind of go for power or try and lift it and actually just lift too much power and go over the bar. So I thought his feeling and his touch was very, very good. That's not easy to do, and I was delighted for him. Obviously, he was a big goal for him. And you can see in his performances how much he's grown, and even in training and around the place, and feeling comfortable and learning off other players in terms of what they're good at as well and the connection. So, really pleased with how he's doing.
And I think you mentioned last week about Sammy Silveira, how much you rated him and how much you think he can grow in as he progresses more. And obviously, it was a tremendous finish from him as well. Sammy and Riley McGree coming back from the Asian Cup, I guess they're now starting to really hit the ground running, aren't they, at this point?
Yeah, definitely. I think Riley, you know, he's missed a lot of football this year for us for his injury and then going away, and I think he's an important player for us and can play across the front in different positions and adapt. So, and Sammy's finds a way, you know, he's got moments in him, he's dangerous, he's sharp. He knows where the goal is, and really excited to see what he's capable of and how he improves, really. It's a big learning season for him, it's a big jump, and he'll admit that himself. A big part of adapting to that, and I think he's certainly shown good signs of that. So excited to see what he's going to be capable of doing.
And obviously, tremendous result at Leicester, and real resolve in holding out at the end, and then you obviously allowed yourself to do the fist pump to the crowd, but can we now take that on into the home where, as was said, we haven't, our home record hasn't been as good recently. Can we take that forward into the home game against Plymouth?
I wish I had the answer for you and just say yes, and it's as easy as that. Yeah, I mean, the pleasing thing last week was the spirit. I think we had a few setbacks leading up to the game. We had a couple extra in the midweek in terms of injuries, and the boys really stuck together. I thought that brought, it's a close group anyway, but I thought there's a few boys in there that have hardly played together really. Paddy coming back into the team who hadn't played with Luke Halen because he obviously came in. Riley coming back, so hadn't played an awful lot. Hadn't played a lot with Finn, because by the time Riley's come back, Finn had been here for a number of weeks. Lewis's first game, so there was a few. Sammy coming in back in, and so there's quite a few kind of new links, if you like. So the boys to come back and show that spirit and stick together, that's not easy to do, and I've seen it go the other way quite a few times as well. But so that was the most pleasing thing. Which gives me a lot of confidence moving forward that even in the tougher times, the boys have got that in them to stick together. And certainly, we need to show that. We need to pick up more points at home as well and create that feeling at the Riverside.
There we are, the words of Rob Nichols and the response of Michael Carrick. Will we be able to carry the whole thing through to a tremendous victory, a second victory for February? Two defeats, one draw, one victory. Let's make it a second victory. And then it kind of begins to look a little bit more healthier. Let's find out what the Fly Me to the Moon team think of this. We have the Bartleys as ever, Thomas Bartley and Chris Bartley. Good to see you guys, and Sean Arai as well. Let's turn to Sean first, if we may. You've just been listening, as our listeners have been tuned in to the Michael Carrick, Miracle Carrick press conference. He was pretty upbeat, I think.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was... quite eager to point out that the team and the side have been buoyed by that result, and why shouldn't they? It was a really excellent performance, and as we were just saying off air there, maybe we could play Leicester every week, I wish.
Yeah, I mean, looking ahead, actually, every game after Plymouth Argyle between now and the end of the season are between sides, obviously Borough facing, who have been in the Premier League, which I suppose, again, suggests the strength of the whole thing. Actually, I think Cardiff City have they not had a time in the Premier League, or was I off base with that? Because in which case, that means it's every side.
Including Cardiff. It was Warnock, wasn't it? Or Warnock got them there, certainly.
Yeah, exactly. Neil Warnock, of course, Aberdeen's latest saviour. So good for him from that point of view, really. So it's good to see he's still in the game. Thomas... The danger is, of course, not another false dawn. I mean, obviously, the good news is the fan walkout has been called off for tomorrow. But really, a victory becomes pretty critical, really. I know Michael Carrick likes to play these things down, but one would hopefully anticipate 3 points against Plymouth Argyle, or else, again, the murmurs of discontent vis-a-vis season ticket prices will begin to rise again.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's been an interesting few weeks, really, because it's felt like we've had lots of jolting changes of degrees of optimism, really, between thinking that, we'd had a result which had turned our fortunes around in a positive direction, to having a few results which have, on paper, particularly those back-to-back defeats to Bristol City and then Preston, which have felt as if they've turned our season in the other direction. But I think particularly given the Leicester result, I mean, that you would think that could have a really galvanising effect. To be honest, though, it has obviously been our home form which has been a bit lacking of late. It's quite something, isn't it, when our last victory there, and only victory so far this calendar year, was against Chelsea, that we haven't really been able to seal the deal on less showy, if you like, less important matches. And so, yeah, I think that Saturday is very important, really, for making sure that we can at least keep competitive. I mean, things are still stacked against us, but, a positive string of results at this stage can still make a difference.
Halfway up the stair, or halfway up the league, is the place where we sit. There isn't any other place quite like it. Well, it's not quite halfway. It's just below in 13th place, and obviously 24 teams in the league. Rob, we heard your questions with respect to Michael Carrick. We listened to his responses. I mean, I know very much looking to carry the result against Leicester into Plymouth Argyle. Is there a sense of optimism? I mean, of course, Plymouth not too far behind us. They've got 37 points. And of course, Mr. Aziz might have something to say or not about the whole sort of scenario. Obviously, Rob having one or two challenges there in terms of connecting in various other bits and pieces. I'll throw the same question to Sean. Are you quietly optimistic in terms of what we're going to see here? Or is it a case of those pilgrims? You know, maybe they'll have a very, very long journey up to the north. It'll almost be like the Mayflower all over again, and they'll realize that the natives will be restless.
I mean, we've been here before, haven't we? Every time we seem to sort of have these really impressive results, it seems that off the back of them, we have games where we feel like we should win. We feel like we can get that momentum going, and it just feels a little bit stop-start like that this season, and it must be really difficult for Carrick, Michael Carrick as well, because just when we get in that sort of, we have a massive result against Leicester, and then we sort of almost hit with the news that Howson and Hackney and the likes could be out for longer than anticipated, and we're struggling for that momentum. So I'd really love us to, make sure that that Leicester victory isn't sort of,
A
an empty
flash in the
victory, if you
pan.
like, by dropping points. So we really need to make that victory what it was, and continue that form if we can. I think it's going to be really difficult now. I think we're 10 points behind. We have got game in hand, but as we know ourselves, they're not points. So, yeah, really optimistic, but with a tinge of nervousness.
Yeah. I mean, so you do have a game in hand, of course. Hull City in sixth place at currently with, I think, 54 points, and Coventry City inevitably sort of hanging around there. It may well be, I think we decided this on the last Blimey Saloon podcast, that Leicester, Leeds, Ipswich, and Southampton are pretty much over the hill and far away in terms of at least two of them will be in the playoffs and so on. Chris Bartley. I'm hesitant to actually say, well, Matt Crooks has gone. Obviously, we lost another striker earlier from the Aston Villa man took his system there. Concerned, or is it a case of, well, at least we could look forward to another £12 million from a club who'll come in for Finn next season?
I think we've just got to be positive about the last few games, really. I think we have to reverse the trend of the last two seasons, where we seem to be playing some of our best football from December to February under Chris Wilder, and then we did under Michael Carrick last season. And then for some reason, we just seem to lack that conviction and the football. I don't know whether we just sort of burnt out too quickly. So whatever we need to do now, we just need to finish well. And I think that the more shocking thing has been our home form, really, because I think post-COVID, we've really performed well at home, but I don't know whether we've really had a run like this where we've only won one in seven. So I think that whether we just want to go on a really good run, or we just want to kind of like maybe get one of those last two playoff places, I think the bottom line is we need to start performing at home, and that's it's a little bit of a mystery, really, why we haven't done that, because I think post-COVID that we have played so well at the Riverside, and I think that's contributed to us getting big crowds. So, I feel quietly confident though that that Leicester thing could be just one of these kind of turning points in our season.
Rob, we got the sense from the press conference that there was a positivity that was there. That obviously Michael Carrick, who inevitably he doesn't let the highs get to him, he doesn't get the lows get to him from that line of things. I mean, it's not as though he's Michael Beale. By the way, he is available. Just a bit of a nightmare scenario there. Any sort of thoughts in terms of you were there, you asked the questions. Did you feel as though cautious optimism or still a case of, well, you know, there's a long way to go here. And really does mean to have an absolutely stonking march, and then who knows where we would be.
We do need to pick up an awful lot of points, but I think what I gathered was that the news came through quite late before Leicester that Johnny Howson and Haden Hackney had picked up bad injuries that could potentially put them out for 2 months each. Similar injuries in the same match. And what I got through was the thought that it really galvanized the team. And he was saying today about how he put together players that hadn't played together before. You know, Paddy McNair coming in as captain, having been out injured for a long time, playing alongside Luke Ayling that he'd never shared a pitch with, putting together a forward line that had never played together. And he said it could have all gone really wrong, but he said that the spirit in the team, the kind of, they knew they were up against it without Hackney and Housen, without any forwards. They were determined to get something out of that game. And I think we can bring that spirit into this match on Saturday. There was the moment at the end, Alex, at the end of the game, which I mentioned to Michael Carrick today. There's the video going around where Carrick and the players are applauding the Borough fans. And he goes to the fans and he sort of teases them as if, no, I'm not going to react. And then he turns around and he does the like Gareth Southgate fist pump, which is really rare for him. He does it maybe once or twice a season. But it's things like that. It's moments like that that everyone's watched who wasn't even at the match has seen it on YouTube or whatever afterwards. It's moments like that that can really kickstart something. And hopefully it will on Saturday. And yes, we bring some of that away form, because the away form has been fairly good, actually. We could bring some of that away form to home. And obviously what's happening when we went to Leicester is we sat back and we hit them on the break. And teams have been coming to Middlesbrough and doing that. And it's a very difficult one to counter, but we have to take our chances, don't we? And fortunately, Manuel Latilath is back fit again. So he will at least be on the bench. We'll at least have a striker in the squad. But yeah, it'd be really nice for Finn Azaz to make it three goal-scoring games in a row and score against the team that he scored for against us, Plymouth, earlier in the season. That would be a nice symmetry to that. He owes it. I said that today. He owes it because he scored against us. He scored a great goal.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what sort of goal he gets on Saturday. Just get a goal.
it's either a positive or a negative that looking at the fixtures in March, with the exception of the home game against Norwich City and the away game against Southampton, all the other sides, Stoke City, QPR, Birmingham City, Blackburn Rovers, are all not necessarily pulling up trees. I mean, obviously, Blackburn have recently had a new manager appointed. We obviously salute and wish Tony Mowbray the very best, but clearly he's left the Birmingham post from that point of view. I don't know, would you prefer to play sides at the top? Because it would seem that actually the record is better against the Leicesters and so on than the ones who are kind of like in the mediocre zone, really.
It has been that way, hasn't it, this season? And obviously raising our game in cup matches as well. But yes, we just need some momentum now, don't we? And a bit of winning at home, obviously. Consistency, momentum, but winning that game on Saturday at home can make a big difference, make a difference to everybody's attitude, I think, and get the spirit of all the fans at home behind us and a bit of belief. I think, as Chris said, and you know, it's important to try and, well, it's not finishing the season because there's a long game, lot of games left, but you know, the second 13, half of the season.
13, lucky 13.
Yeah, unlucky. It's important to sort of get a run going now and show that we have what Michael Carrick said last week. He said it was important that we had foundations in place for next season, even if we fail this season, I think he's saying. And I think we did see a couple of glimpses of that at Leicester in Sammy Silvera, who I think was very patchy in his form when he came into the club. But he's come from nowhere. He's been signed for a very small fee. He's learning he's quite clearly learning his trade in that he's got a lot of natural ability, but you can see his decision-making can often be completely, questionable. But he has played very little football. And then The other another player, of course, is Finn Azaz that we signed. He's taken a little time to settle, but he is settling now, and he's something different to what we've had before. He might not be the quickest on his feet, but he's very quick with his brain.
Is Matthew Hoppe still around, or has he decided to actually go back to America? I mean, again, another possibility who was, I think, heralded as being possibly an important part of the whole Borough setup.
Yeah, he's actually been given a shirt number again. So, yes, it's now or never in a way for him. He did go back on another loan to America, but he came back. And so, yes, there is an opportunity for him, surely, because Josh Coburn is still not fit. So we say that Lati Lath is at least going to be on the bench. Maybe he'll start. But there's an opportunity for Matthew Hoppe to try and get in there, because there are very few forward, there are very few out and out forward options. We're doing it in a way that, you know, in the old Man City way, without a recognised centre forward. Obviously, it didn't do City any harm, because they won the title, didn't they, at a canter without a centre forward.
The false number nine is an interesting line, particularly when Gabriel Jesus is actually in that particular position. But he's obviously doing things for Arsenal now, which are a different line entirely. Rob, just sticking with you momentarily, we said earlier, clearly the ban protest has been called off. Is that a good thing? Or do you think in a cost of living crisis, there's still this danger that maybe fans can be taken for granted, and before you know whether you are, they'll be heading off to support Lenny Lawrence at Hartlepool?
Well, then, of course, it's Kevin Phillips at Hartlepool now,
true,
isn't it?
So, yes, indeed.
Well, I think that's the point. You fans might be quite shocked to see how much it costs to go and see Kevin Phillips Hartlepool. The differential isn't as big as it was. I think nobody wants to see prices going up season after season, but I didn't like the idea of a protest myself, walking out in the 30th minute. I'm not sure what that says to the players on the pitch or the manager. I think back to a few seasons ago, before Thomas's time, but Lee Catamore was a famous game against Aston Villa in which we were getting absolutely hammered. Lee Catamore was a teenager. He burst out into tears, and I asked him the next week, I was interviewing him, why he was crying. People said he was crying because he was so upset with the way we were playing. And he said he was so upset with the atmosphere in the crowds. He just couldn't understand it, and it really upset him. We got hammered that day, but that was the same season that we got to the FA Cup semi-final, same season that we got to the UEFA Cup final. And sometimes you've got to call for a bit of perspective. But also recognise what I'm saying here is that the players are affected by what happens in the crowd. And some would say that it's a small pain for large gain, but I don't know. I think there was a lot of risk this week, Alex. I was in a meeting. We were in a meeting for 3 hours, and there's been quite a bit of reports afterwards which have been really wide of the mark. Everybody was busily trying to work out some sort of agreement coming out of that meeting. And I think got there in the end with some concessions around the ground, concessions in concession tickets. The week before, myself and some of the people in the forum had managed to put it across to the football club that they had not given people enough time to renew. They'd given them a month, but it was within a month. It was one paycheck. They accepted that. They put it on board. I think we're now going to be in a position where, as fans groups, we're going to be much closer working with the football club going forward. But it's just the crazy economics of the football league, in that they need the money difference between the parachute clubs and the rest is just such a chasm that you get into a situation, as you can see this season, where potentially it's the same three teams are going up and down every. And that is so unhealthy for the whole structure of the league. And we need to find some way. And what's happening is a burden is falling on fans and on club owners. It's a big problem.
Good news is, of course, I mean, you might well find that with respect to the points deduction scenarios that are being talked about at present, Nottingham Forest, Everton and Man City could actually drop down. In City's case, we're ready for the champ for the National League, obviously. Thomas, from your own perspective, talking about fan prices as a student and so on, is it a case of this is ridiculous? I can't afford to get a mortgage in any case to actually before I go for a season ticket.
I think that it's a very complicated picture. I think that as Rob has outlined, and I remember we had a conversation about this last year. I think Rob, if I remember correctly, had put in some graphics, infographics, if you like, in the fanzine around the different price breakdowns of the changes that were made last year. And like Rob has said, it's a very difficult economic picture for the club, as it is for the country and any organisations like this. I think that a lot of the criticisms people may have made, I mean, for example, one that the club simply hasn't listened. Well, I don't think that's true. The fact that they've obviously acted on the recommendations around concessions and the time period of renewal. I think that sometimes, I mean, I don't think that Middlesbrough is the only club that has this problem, but I think that they haven't always been their best friends when it comes to communications and communicating some of these issues and explanations. Maybe that is where a lot of the frustration stems from, and often does with these things. But yes, I mean the problem is obviously it goes far beyond Middlesbrough in that who is going to foot the costs of the rising costs that clubs have to foot in order to not just exist but really challenge in this division. And I don't think anyone would like, as Rob has said, like to see this yo-yo situation where it's just the parachute payment benefited teams that can really challenge for promotion. So I think that really a protest, I mean, I understand the merits of it. I'm never opposed on principle to people trying to do something a bit more direct. But I think that it is an issue that goes way beyond Teesside. I mean, it's difficult to say whether that is in a situation that can improve. I mean, I think probably lobbying would be more effective on that level, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, I understand the frustrations. Obviously, rising costs isn't something that anyone wants to see. But really, if you compare a lot of these season ticket prices to prices that you would pay to go to a night for a gig or a comedy performance, theatre, all of these things, you'll see it right across the board. They're all rising prices. So it's really a much wider problem.
Sean, any thoughts from yourself? Would you advocate direct action, or is it a case of rising prices like rising damp continues ever upwards?
Yeah, a little bit like the lads have already alluded to. I think the complexities of it are so deep that it's difficult for the general fan who maybe doesn't want to get drawn into the financial implications of the day-to-day running costs of a football club. You know, they might not fully understand all of that and may not have an interest in it. I think it's okay to be frustrated at the costs going up, but as Thomas alluded to, that it's happening everywhere. And I think the one thing that we can say about Steve Gibson is that for the most part he's got the club's interest and the area's interest at heart. I don't think he's one to just sort of, you know, dig his heels in and make a decision and not sort of communicate that effectively. And it is good to see that there's meetings going on with fan forums and groups and stuff. And hopefully there can be a bit more communication and explanation as to why they've arrived at that price bracket. I wasn't really in favour of a protest. I don't think it helps anybody. But in the same breath, I do understand some of the frustrations.
Mm. Chris Bartley, from your own perspective and back from the day where we could actually remember that you used to have a season ticket book with slips that you could actually tear out as the games walked by and the sort of the 21 games that were around from that point of view. I always thought that physicality was much better than a card, but still. Any thoughts from your own point of view?
Yeah, it's really a difficult one, really, because I think whenever I go to the match, I've never booed at a game, and my whole purpose is from the first minute to the 90th minute has just been kind of all about supporting the club. And but that said, if the sort of maybe the threat of this kind of walkout has maybe forced, maybe closer ties and closer negotiations with the with the administration at Middlesbrough Football Club and Steve Gibson, well then some good has come out of it really. And it sounds as though from what Rob said that moving on, that there will be closer discussions, go throughout. So I'd like to think that some positive has come out of that really. And I'm sure that the people in the Red faction, that was the last thing they wanted to do, was leave at the 30th minute. It's just I think any form of protest is sometimes I'm a teacher. We were on strike last year, and it's not something that you want to do. But if the end product improves things, then it's been a price worth taking really. So it is, yeah. It's a strange one really. I thought of the thing that Rob said about how the players might have been affected. If fans walked out, would people be booing the fans who were walking out? And it just gets like a really toxic atmosphere. So I'm pleased that some good has come out of it, and I'm also glad that there isn't a protest on the 30th minute, really. So yeah, it's a very difficult one because I'm looking back over history. I'm totally behind the right to protest, but during the course of a game, I felt a little bit conflicted over it, if I'm being honest. It's a tough one,
As
being
indeed
totally
Sean
honest.
alluded to, it's all about communications, and clearly there are a lot of stakeholders involved here, and the fans as stakeholders often need to be considered as much as clearly the players and staff as well. Okay, Robert, let's cut to the quick result prediction. Middlesbrough versus Plymouth Argyle. What are you going to go for?
Surely this time, Alex. Surely we've been here before, and everyone has been. We've all been predicting with our hearts, but surely this time we'll do it and we'll win 2-0, and that'll send us in a good send off for Chris and me are going to the Carling Cup night next week, because it's 20 years after we won the cup final
Are
on
you
leap
saying it
year
was
day.
20 years ago today Steve McLaren taught the band to play?
Well, it is unbelievable, isn't it? That was our cup. It was 20 years ago, so it's we're celebrating next week and with all the. With all those players and everything. So let's hope we're celebrating after having had a really good win over Plymouth.
Well, I think I'll actually be bold and say a 4-0 win to Middlesbrough on that basis, and just sort of keep the bar being risen
Yeah.
or rising. Thomas, what's your prediction?
I think that I will go for a slightly more conservative prediction of a 1-0 win to Borough.
Okay, and Sean?
Yeah, I like 2-0 as well. Actually, I'm going to go
Chris, you're going to go crazy and say it's going to be 7-1, obviously.
2-0.
No, I'm going to go for a 2-1. A 2-1 Winterborough.
Okay. Okay, Stoke City up next. We won't do predictions for that, but are we reasonably comfortable given the away form that visits to the Potteries again, which of course had nice results against Port Vale, will be a
Yeah.
positive line, Thomas?
Yeah, I mean, I think that like we've said earlier on, we just need a bit of momentum behind us now, really. And I think if we could win on Saturday and then win again next week, we'll have had three wins on the trot, and then we go into a group of quite interesting games coming up after that with a lot more confidence. So yeah, hopefully we can get the win there as well.
Yeah, March, as we say, home to Norwich City, away to QPR, away to Birmingham City, home to Blackburn Rovers, and away to Southampton. So, Sean, reasonably comfortable from that point of view, or do you feel as though, in the classic words, with a bit of momentum, it is literally all to play for?
I'm looking forward to a bit of momentum, like Thomas was saying. I think it's going to be a good period for us to get our teeth into. In some ways, I know that at the beginning of the season we were looking at sort of promotion and being up there, but I think a lot of fans would accept that this will be a bit of a transition period. And if we can finish strongly and get some of those new players, don't forget there was a really big turnover in players, and if we can start to sort of bed them in and get them in invested in the culture and the way of playing that Carrick likes to play. I think we don't need too many additions. I think the groundwork is done. I think we're going to have a good nucleus for next season.
Chris, you're nodding. I take it that that means you're in full agreement there. Thank you. We might not make it this time around, although the options are still there. But come 2024-25, all be well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the last 2 years, even though we finished quite early, we seem to kind of limp to the end of the season. And I think whatever happens, we just need to finish well, you know. And I think it's quite some, you know, the teams that do finish well one during the season, they do tend to start well. And I know we had a lot of changes over last summer, but we seem to have a little bit of a hangover as well with our self-belief and everything, I think, when we started this season. So I think regardless of what happens, even if we might just get pipped out of the playoffs, I think as long as we finish well, I think people will be happy with that.
And Robert, given the thrashing against Chelsea, which clearly we kind of jokingly said it was a prep for the Sunderland game, but I mean, do you think, and I'm sure that Michael Carrick would never admit to this because they are professional players, etc., but do you think there's a bit of a hangover there from the fact that so close and yet so far, that was quite a lesson to be learned, really?
It was certainly very disappointing. I spoke to Johnny Howson a couple of weeks afterwards, and he was totally gutted because he's a long career, a very good career, but he'd never been to a final, and he was actually injured when Norwich played us in the playoff final. Mm. So he'd never played in a Wembley final, so he was personally really gutted about it. And obviously that it wasn't just a question of being beaten, it was a question of being hammered, wasn't it? So I think they've maybe cleared a lot of that out of the way from, you know, with that victory at Leicester. That's brought them together again. And we are down to the bare bones once again. But it's interesting to look at Stoke. Stoke are really struggling in the league. Steve Gibson made a very good point the other week that their owners, that the Coates family, Bessett 365, they're in the top 20 rich list in the country. By rights, you would think that Stoke City would be up there with Manchester City and challenging in there, but they're not. And because of financial fair play, they can't put any more money in as a family than any other club, which is really interesting. But yeah, and we remember they had a long, long stay in the Premier League, and they fell out with their Tony Pulis, didn't they?
Indeed.
I'm not sure that. But yes, I think we can go there and win and maybe start getting some back-to-back wins, which okay, would be really good.
Well, the next Flying Sunderland podcast will probably be coming up, obviously, in March. That will doubtless be the home game against Norwich City. Is that the next official paper fanzine release for that one, Rob?
Blackburn's the next one.
Blackburn, okay, fair enough.
Which is Saturday the 16th.
It is Saturday the 16th, absolutely. Mm. So, Rob, how can people actually subscribe or get hold of copies for Flying to the Moon, the paper edition, for the remaining part of the season?
If you go to the website fmttmborough.com and look at the fanzine shop, and also while you're at it, anybody buy a tin of food or something from the supermarket this weekend, because we've got an appeal for the food bank, and also My Borough, My Boots. We're appealing for boots, for especially for kids that grow out of them so quickly. And if anybody has winter coats, we're collecting for all those things behind the North Stand before the match from 12 o'clock, 12 noon.
Fantastic. So great news there. Okay. That's it then, gentlemen. We need to have Rob lead us in the final routine. We've had the press conference. We've had Michael Carrick. We've had all sorts of routines. We've had comments on fanzines, etc., or fan zones, fan protests. Rob, by the way, can you give us any inside information? Are you maintaining the cost of Fly Me to the Moon for next season, or is it a case of, no, it's going up to £5 per issue?
Well, it's a problem because the post has gone up to £1.25 in first class. Yeah. So it is possible we might be absolutely forced to put it up for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Just doing the communications thing, laying that sort of line basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Worth it. Looking at it now, working it out, I don't think we I think we have to put it up, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, well, on that note, just around the corner from the budget, I'm sure Jeremy Hunt needs to actually get start giving tax dividends so people will purchase Fly Me to the Moon. It's got to be worth some tax credits. But would you like to lead us in those final seven words, Rob? A one, two, three.
Come on, Burr.
Come on, Burr. Come on, Burr. Come on, Burr. Come on, Burr. Come on, Burr.